Hello, everybody, and welcome to another brilliant Sport and Lifestyle Biz here on your Real Feel Good Radio, UK Health Radio. This week, we've got four interviewees. We start and end the show with motorsport. We start off with Chloe Chong. It's a young 16-year-old driver who drives in the Formula One Academy. We then go on to lifestyle, and we have Julia Dalbart-Pusey, who is a star of Below Deck Mediterranean. And then Dr. Chris talking about how we can look out for early warning signs for heart disease. And we finish off with more motorsport, stunt driver and team owner, Zandara Kennedy, all the way from America. Throw in our SLB Sports Roundup and we just know you're going to love the show. Well, everybody, today I'm joined by a very talented young lady. She's from the F1 Driver Academy. It's the amazingly talented Chloe Chong. Hi, Chloe, how are you?
Hi, John. I'm super happy to be here. Thank you for having me on the show. Yeah, excited to answer some questions today.
Brilliant. Absolutely my pleasure. It's great to have young, talented people on the show, and you certainly are that. So, yeah, thank you for joining us. Looking forward to chatting to you, obviously, about your racing and your journey. But just so the listeners can get to know you a little bit better, if we can strip it back to the start, when was your first interest in cars, and how did you get started in karting?
Yeah, so the first interest I remember from being a little kid and cars and racing and all that was actually just during the weekends. Like, as I think a 4 or 5 year old would watch the F1 as a family, mostly myself and my father, just because my mum was working really hard, you know, to be able to, I guess, bring up me and my two other siblings. So it was me and my father, and we just watched F1 every weekend. And I don't know, that bonding experience and mixed with the excitement of both of us when cars race around tracks, it made me really, I guess, passionate for the sport. And it came to the point where I just wanted to try it myself because it looks so fun. And I never really thought like this big journey of going to go from cars into cars. It was more like, you know what, this looks like fun. I just want to give it a go and see what it's like and see how Lewis started and all that, because that's what really inspired me. I think the first person that I really looked up to was Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, and we'll come back to it in the end, but look where you are now, full circle. How amazing is that?
I know, it's amazing.
You spoke about Lewis. He's an inspiration to many, even people of my generation, just to see how he's changed the landscape, how he's pushed forward, you know, changed the whole game, really. And yeah, so that's amazing. Would he be your main inspiration in the sport?
I wouldn't say now he's my main inspiration. I would say he definitely takes credit as the first inspiration, person that I really kept my eye on.
Yeah.
In the world of motorsports, but, you know, as a female, I always wanted to have that female role model, and I think I always have to owe the likes of Danica Patrick and Jamie Chadwick, Susie Wolf, for everything that they've done to, I guess, let us girls know that it is possible to make a career, it is possible to be successful, and I guess to put down whatever doubts come into your heads, really, about one not being physically able, because it is possible. We saw Susie do the FP1 session.
Yes.
And Danica in IndyCar, where it's a whole of a lot more physical as well. So, you know, I really have big belief in female abilities, and just, yeah, having that inspiration that they've done it before really helps me, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to hear. It's a great message. We do a lot for girls in football. That's our origin, where we started.
Amazing.
And we train girls from grassroots into like Chelsea, you know, clubs like that, like the middleman sort of thing. And we find that having professionals come to the training sessions shows the girls a pathway. It's easy to go and watch the Premier League on the television, but to see someone that looks like you, if that makes sense, is in your shoes, that helps. And you've mentioned three amazing ladies there, you know, Susie Wolf, very high up, Danica Patrick, IndyCar, and a bit of NASCAR. You know, not even many drivers in the whole of motorsport can say they've done that. And obviously Jamie Chadwick, she's just been amazing. Yeah, three great inspirations for you then. Also, you hope to follow in their footsteps.
Yeah, I think that's the goal. Obviously, I want to make a really successful career, but alongside that, I want to give back, because it's been a tough journey and I know how hard it is to get through that sport, both mentally and physically, also with school commitments and everything. So I think the goal is to make that career, but also to be able to get other girls into sports and to divert the fear away from them of sort of the challenges that they may face by helping them out and giving them some good solid advice or just helping them through that path.
That's a lovely message. You know, it's, I don't say there's any disrespect at all, especially from one so young. It's amazing that you're willing to do that. That's a fabulous message there, Chloe. How did you find karting early on? We've mentioned that your inspiration was Lewis, and then obviously you're now looking at the females in the sport to show you the pathway. Obviously, both whether you're in or not in motorsport, it's quite common knowledge that motorsport is quite difficult financially. It's one of them sports that even high up, you don't really get paid. But more importantly, did you find it harder being a young girl? Like, any disrespect or shade from the boys? Did you find it difficult to get respect? And did you have any obstacles to overcome?
I think, you know, of course, as a girl in the sport, I think it's a given that you'll always be the minority and always get, you know, maybe like a look or just a side comment. But the most important for me was just, I didn't really pay attention to it. You know, I was doing my own thing. I just wanted to improve by myself. Even now, when I'm racing against a field of girls, there'll always be one or two people that will, you know, try to put you down. But the most important thing is that you know what you're doing. And I guess you're looking for personal improvement rather than where you are against other girls. Because for me, for example, I'm the only girl with no experience in F1 Academy. So there's no point in me pitting myself against Marta, for example, because I know that, you know, she's had 6-7 years of experience. And I've actually been able to use her instead to help me and to give me advice and how to improve. And I think that's been the most useful part of the F1 Academy for me.
Brilliant. And again, we'll come on to, obviously, how you made the big jump. But almost, you've just basically given out a great message there by saying you let your talking go on the track.
Yeah, I think being on the track, I'd say that my goal isn't to prove people wrong. My goal is to be the best person I can be. And if that means proving people wrong along the way, then I'm more than happy to do so.
Yeah.
I think that's a great achievement for me. And it brings me a lot of joy to be able to, I guess, break those mental barriers and I guess what people say as well.
Yeah, perfect. Great stuff, Chloe. Karting was a huge part of your life, obviously, early on, for about 7 years. And then at the age of 13, which is still very young, but then at 13, you entered the British Kart Championship in Minimax. How did you find that first experience?
I mean, it was 2020, so we had COVID, obviously, here, and it was definitely quite tough. Basically, what we did was the year before, we did some testing and, you know, got used to the kart and everything, and then suddenly we had this 6-month break of lockdown and all this, and having to get back into the kart was quite hard. But I thought that, you know, how we did in that year, considering all circumstances against so many drivers, again with a lot more experience, and to finish with a seeded position and to say that you finished in the top 10 in the UK was really rewarding. And I think the season which really set me off and said, you know what, if we keep pushing, we keep building, and in some principle we were catching up with the other drivers with the more experience, but we were catching up fast. So it was kind of like, but you know what, in a couple of years time we can catch up completely. And I think that was the first time where I thought that I'd be really successful in this industry.
Yeah, that is fantastic. And what I like, Chloe, is that you keep challenging yourself, which for me is the best way for improvement. You know, if you sit inside your comfort zone, you are going to improve, but it's going to be gradual rather than taking the big leaps like you have.
No, I definitely agree. I think coming out of my comfort zone has been something that actually I struggle with quite a bit on track. But in terms of putting myself mental and, I guess, long-term goals, I think I'm very good at it. And I'm one of those people that will never be quite satisfied with any achievement that I make. So I'm always pushing myself forwards in those long-term and mental goals. But yeah, this year has been a real building experience in terms of being on track on the day and only having a limited amount of time to achieve those goals. And I think I've matured so much over this year and been able to put my confidence a lot further forward. So I think in all terms, like, yeah, it's been a really big growth experience in terms of pushing my own boundaries and kind of going outside of the box in terms of the mentality of racing.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Well, everybody, today it gives me a great pleasure to be joined by someone who's been a star on the screen. It's Julia Dalbart-Pusey from E4's Below Deck Mediterranean. Hi, Jules, how are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
Really well, thank you. It's good to see you. Massive smile, and thank you for giving up your time.
No problem. It's great to talk about my experience on the yachts and kind of share that with everyone else. So, yeah.
It is quite a recent hit show. I know it's been going for many years, so there's probably not many people that get the inside track of what it's like. So I really appreciate you helping us to understand it a bit more.
Yeah, the glamorised version and the real version.
And like most things, but yeah, absolutely, I can quite imagine it. Just to get to know you a little bit more, perhaps we can go back to the start, if that's okay. How was it when you were growing up? Did you have any links to the water or to yachting?
Do you know what? Not at all, no. I've loved, like, being by the sea. Obviously, I'm from Leeds, yeah. So we're not near the sea.
No.
My parents from the New Forest originally,
yeah. Okay.
So obviously they were by the sea, but no links whatsoever to boat or anything, so completely new to me.
Okay, so was this just something you decided you'd like to do? Did you get introduced to sort of boating or yachting as an early adult?
No, it's quite a funny story actually. So me and my friend in our early 20s went travelling around kind of Spain and France. And then we kind of ran out of money. The idea was that we took our sewing machines, because I studied fashion,
okay.
And we'd make bikinis. So we were going along the beach trying to sell these bikinis, and we must have looked mad. And it didn't really work out. We ran out of money, and then we kind of stumbled across Cannes and Antibes, and then got chatting to some local people in the pub, and they were like, why don't you do some day work? And we were like, what's day work? Like, sounds a little bit weird, to be honest. And they were like, you need to walk along the dock, and then you need to say, can I come and work on your boat in the morning? And then that's it. So we tried it. We put on our rollerblades, so we must have looked even madder. We rollerblade along the dock, and we were like, have you got any work? And they honestly must have thought, these girls aren't going to turn up at 6 a.m. in the morning. And we did.
Yeah.
And we did our work, and you get like €100 to help clean and turn the boat over. And from there I was like, okay, this seems like a good gig for me. Yeah, so from there we did lots of day work and stuff like that. And then eventually I thought, do you know what? I could do this for a season. And I went and got my STCW95, which you need to work on too.
Okay.
And I did my first season probably a few years later.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, and that's obviously amazing. And what a fabulous way to start, really. Like you said, you're travelling, you're getting a bit short of money, chatting to whether they're strangers or not in the pub, and a little suggestion, and you've gone and done it and proved yourself. And it's probably not bad money either.
No, it's not. And that was a fair few years ago, yeah. Honest case, in fact. Back then, €100 was quite significant.
Yeah. You know, and it's great. And obviously, you've got a career out of it. I mean, that's absolutely fabulous. So when you then made that step after you got your CW95, as you said, was your first job or your first season, was it actually on a charter yacht?
Yeah. So basically, a few years later, I was like, right, let's go and do this. So I was like, I'll just get myself to Antibes. I'll do my STCW95.
Yeah.
I stayed on a friend's floor, and I was very lucky because I signed up with an agency. I'd already had the day work on my CV, so that helped me. And then I applied for a job, and it was on a 30-metre with a French crew, and I got the job straight away. So I was lucky in that fact, because the competition is right out there.
Yeah, I can imagine, especially as you said, with it actually being perceived it's a holiday, even though it's not. You know, it's a lovely lifestyle, but also the money. You probably do get paid in relative terms very well. So, yeah, I can imagine that when you get on there, if you're lucky enough to get a job, you then actually have to go and prove yourself to make a career out of it.
Yeah, because if you're useless, you're going to be off the boat. Because you're stuck on there for 6 months and you're travelling on the yacht. So right. If you're useless, they literally have to pay your plane ticket home and you're gone and they'll get someone else on. There's a queue of people waiting for the job.
Yeah, I bet there is. I mean, that you can see from the show, which is probably one of the rare truer things, if that makes sense, because you can't condense that down, can you? You can't take out the timeline of someone going in, getting fired or whatever it is, and then someone else coming in. So, as we said, now you've been working on boats for a while. Great that you've done your first season, which obviously went well, very big boat. When did you realise this is for me? When were you sort of hooked or got the bug?
Well, I'll be honest, I'm not a true yachty, as we call it. I never did season after season. I never did the med season and then went and did the Caribbean season. What you do, I was obsessed about fashion and I basically used yachting as a way to pay for my studies. So I dipped in very much in and out, which you can do, which is good about yachting. So, but after that first season, I was like, I can make some good money and it can pay for my studies. So I used it as a tool for me to excel in other areas.
And that's good. And obviously, that is good, as you said, you know, but you claim yourself not to be a true yachty, which is fine, but you obviously care enough about the job. And perhaps that's just personal standards. You know, some people do hold their own standards are different. But you've obviously got to impress. And if you're not staying in it, then to impress a little bit more if someone comes in and takes your slot. So was the first port of call when you thought, I want to have another season, I could do another sort of cash injection into my fashion business?
Yeah.
Did you go back to the same boat initially? Was that your first port of call?
You know what? I did actually. So I actually went back to the French yacht that I worked on previously, but it had a different crew and it was very, very different to the fact that I actually left that boat because it was just too much for me. And that's when I actually went and joined Below Deck Med. So yeah, because the first season I did was a charter yacht and it was non-stop, constant, making money, which was great. And then the second time I went onto this boat, it was another charter season, ran very differently. I didn't get on with the stew very well. And I was like, oh no, I can't stay on here. So the opportunity of Below Deck came along and I was like, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to take it.
Well, before we obviously move on to Below Deck, that's where you've obviously been made more public because it's obviously a television show. You say the opportunity came along. Was it something that you saw? Was it something you were recommended to? And did you have to go through some sort of interview process?
So I basically had a small fashion label and it worn me down and I was like, right, I need to go and get some more money. So I'm going to go back on the yachts. And I actually applied for the show, but I didn't hear anything. I think I just saw a advert on Facebook or something. And I thought, do you know what? Why not? Caution to the wind. Let's do it. And I didn't hear anything. And then when I was actually on the yacht that I didn't enjoy working on, I got contacted and they said, can we talk to you? And I thought, oh, good grief. So I had to do it all in secret, which was all a bit dodgy. And then they were like, we really like you. And you get interview process. You even get, I don't know the proper word for it, but psychoanalyzed. Yeah. Is that the proper word?
Yeah.
So I had all that to be done. And then I thought, oh, yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to leave the yacht. And they said, can you come and join?
Fabulous. So we've all come back to flitting and out of this now. But I presume the psychoanalyst, as it was, is that to prepare you? Because it must be a very, very pressurised, intense situation.
Exactly, it was. I actually don't think I was prepared for it. I don't really like drama. I'll be honest, I'm quite a sweet-natured person.
Yeah.
It's not in my nature to be at conflict. So I think this psychoanalysis, or however you say it, is basically to make sure you're of sound mind and you're not going to lose your shit on there.
It's been a long day without you, my friend. And I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. We've come a long way from where we began. Oh, I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. When I see you again.
Damn. No, all the planes we flew, good things we've been through, then I'll be standing right here talking to you about another path. I know we love to hit the road and laugh, but something told me that it wouldn't last. Had to switch up, look at things different, see the bigger picture. Those were the days, hard work forever pays. Now I see you in a better place. See you in a better place.
Can we not talk about family when family's all that we got? Everything I would do, you were standing there by my side. And now you gon' be with me for the last ride.
It's been a long day without you, my friend. And I'll tell you all about it when I see you again.
I see you again.
We've come a long way,
yeah, we came a long way
from where we began.
You know, we started.
Oh, I'll tell you all about it when I see you again.
I'll tell you.
When I see you again.
You both go out your way and the vibe is feeling strong and we're small. Turn to a friendship turn to a bond, and that bond will never be broken. The love will never get lost. And when brotherhood come first, then the line will never be crossed. Established it on our own when that line had to be drawn, and that line is what we reach. So remember me when I'm gone.
Can we not talk about family when family's all that we got? Everything I went through, you were standing there by my side. And now you're gonna be with me for the last ride.
So let the light guide your way. Yeah. Hold every memory as you go. And every road you take. Without you, my friend, and I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. We've come a long way from where we began. Oh, I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. When I see you again.
Well, everybody, today I'm joined by NHS GP and media medic, Dr. Chris George. Hi, Dr. Chris, how are you?
Hi, very good, John, thank you.
Brilliant. Yeah, thank you so much for joining me. It's actually our lifestyle part of our show, and it's a very important subject. We're going to call it Don't Hesitate, Act, and it's about seeing those early warning signs of heart attack or heart symptoms and the importance of recognising them. Just tell us in general how we miss them or what they are.
Yeah, so I think there's been a lot of confusion in terms of symptoms of heart attack.
Yeah.
Most people think a heart attack is sort of pain in the chest, but actually there's lots of different symptoms that are also represent a heart attack. So things like squeezing across the chest and feeling of unease, shortness of breath, feeling or being sick, back or jaw pain without any chest pain at all can all be symptoms of a heart attack. I think what we're trying to do with this NHS campaign is raise awareness of the different types of symptoms firstly, and the second thing is to make people aware that the symptoms of a heart attack don't always feel as severe as people might expect. And if they have any of these symptoms of a heart attack, then it's never too early to call 999 and describe your symptoms.
That's fantastic. You know, you haven't just given us the obvious one. There's many certain things and some that are really not as connectable as others.
Yeah, exactly, and that's with this campaign trying to raise awareness of the different symptoms and really encourage people to seek advice early, because a lot of people in our survey that we did actually thought that heart attack symptoms only lasted a few seconds or maximum a minute or two, but actually they can go on for several days, and the longer that we leave them untreated, the more damage is done to the heart muscle, and we know that this isn't always reversible and can lead to serious complications. So we really do want people to come forward and call 999 and to actually ask for emergency help earlier than what we're currently seeing.
That's fantastic. Thank you for putting that out there. And something else you also mentioned in your first main answer that again might apply to people is you said you want people to call 999 as quickly as possible. Now, I know for one, when I say I'm not really a doctor's person, I have to be ill to go to the doctors, because I know there's either loads of people there that, or loads of people that are worse off than me. But to call 999, you can't stress the importance whether it turns out to be serious or not.
Exactly. Without sort of seeing a doctor or a medical professional and getting sort of further advice and help, it's not possible always to distinguish whether you're having a heart attack or not. And actually in the NHS campaign video that we've done, we had two examples of Gemma and Asif who both had heart attack symptoms.
Right.
And a lot of the time they thought, actually, no, I'm too young, or I'm having food poisoning, this can't possibly be a heart attack. And actually, they delayed getting help for their treatment. And what we saw was Asif in particular, because he delayed treatment, it led to problems with his heart muscle, and he's had long-term complications as a result. So really, it was really powerful listening to these people actually share their stories and reinforce that message that people should seek help early.
That's lovely to hear, and not great that you can use examples, but it is sometimes good to actually see things, isn't it? Actually see for yourself the examples that can be provided.
Exactly. It gives people a bit more context. As a medical professional, you see a poster, sometimes become a bit immune to the information, myself included. So it's really nice to have those case examples where Gem and Asif share their story. Just it gives that powerful message to people to not delay seeking any medical advice and to call 999 early.
Brilliant. Thank you. Well, a stat I have been looking at, which is quite worrying. I mean, I'm a qualified football coach, so you can look out for warning signs. But I've read that nearly one in two people claim they wouldn't or they couldn't recognise the signs that we've mentioned. This is obviously quite high. How do we go about learning more? Are there courses? Is it self-researching? Is it talking to people, or just a campaign that you're doing?
Yeah, so first and foremost, the campaign that we're doing provides lots of information about heart attack symptoms. There's also, people who are interested, we have a website, nhs.uk/heart attack, and you can find more information on there as well. The NHS has various social media pages where information is shared, and also the video can be found on YouTube and also on Twitter and Instagram. So there's lots of different ways to access information. And we're just really trying to target people in different ways to raise awareness.
Brilliant, thank you. And one other thing is that when I say it's known, it's probably a preconceived idea and factual that heart attacks or issues are probably more common to men. But studies now show that around 30,000 women each year are admitted to hospital following a heart attack, and that is just in the UK alone. I mean, this is a problem for everybody.
Exactly, and we can't emphasise that enough, that anyone who is having these symptoms should call 999 early and describe their symptoms and seek emergency help. In terms of women, as you mentioned, 30,000 women are admitted following a heart attack each year in the UK alone. And actually, women's risk of a heart attack increases after menopause.
Right.
So it's really important that people take these symptoms seriously. And the faster that you seek medical assistance, the better the chance of recovery. So we really need to all be aware of heart attack symptoms and seek urgent medical advice when we identify them.
Now, and that's a great point that you've mentioned in that for people, you know, that are listening and will be looking out for what we put on the website and in our promotion for this, is the fact that, yes, it does involve women as well, but after menopause, their chances actually increase quite significantly.
That's right, yeah. And we also see that there's misconceptions in terms of, I think a lot of people imagine heart attacks as people collapse to the floor, losing consciousness, but actually that's more of a symptom, what we call a cardiac arrest. And a heart attack and a cardiac arrest are actually two very different things.
Right.
And in our survey, almost half the people thought that they were actually the same thing, when in fact they're very different. So just explain to the listeners, a heart attack is where you get a blockage of blood supply to the heart, whereas a cardiac arrest is where the heart stops completely and suddenly. So it's really important that if people do have any symptoms of a heart attack, that they recognise them, because if we leave it untreated, a heart attack can lead to a cardiac arrest, which is why recognition of heart attack symptoms and calling 999 quickly is absolutely vital.
That's fabulous. That's probably one of the most imperative points you've made in this great interview, is the fact that a heart attack and a cardiac arrest are two separate things, even though they're connected to the heart. So thank you for that. You said a heart attack is a blockage of blood to or from the heart, and the cardiac arrest is when the heart stops. So the reasons you have them are two totally different things.
Exactly. And what we don't want is that a heart attack left untreated then leaves the cardiac arrest, and the chances of survival are therefore quite low. So if people actually have help, call 999, the best their overall prognosis. And also, we want to keep people living healthy and happier lives, so please just call 999 and someone is there. And yes, the NHS is busy, but it's never too busy to take your call.
No, that's brilliant. Thank you for that. You know, if you feel like you're having a heart attack, it doesn't mean your heart stops. It's a very major warning sign.
Exactly, and people really need to become more aware of these symptoms of a heart attack so that we can help people to lead healthy lives.
Brilliant, thank you. Well, it looks like we're coming to the end of our slot. Just a couple of quick things before we do let you go. What would be your advice for people, if your friend, say, is having strange symptoms, or, you know, perhaps sweating or feeling unwell?
The key message here is that it's never too early to call 999 and describe your friend's symptoms, and that we shouldn't simply dismiss signs of a heart attack when we do see them. Getting help early is absolutely vital.
Thank you. And then just to finish off, you've mentioned a few different areas before. What are the main social media or internet outlets that people can research the information that they need for this really important subject?
Yeah, so please take a look at NHS across all social media platforms. The video in terms of the heart attack can be found on YouTube and also on Twitter. And then we also have the NHS website, nhs.uk/heart attack, for more information.
That's absolutely fabulous. Well, Dr. Chris, it's a shame you've come to the end. I'm doing a few other projects, so I might stay in touch if that's okay, because your knowledge has been invaluable and I've learned a lot already just in these 10 minutes. So thank you for that. But for today, Dr. Chris George, NHS GP and media medic, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, John. Take care.
Thank you.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living. We've been doing this for over 40 years. Every year, more and more people are living satisfying lives completely cruelty-free. Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Well, everybody, with me this week is an inspirational lady. She's a stunt driver, she's a stunt performer, and she's a team owner driver. It's Zandara Kennedy. Zandara, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
Well, thank you. I want to say thank you for your time. You explained to me you've got a busy month coming up, so lovely we could fit this in.
I'm really excited for this chat.
Thank you very much. Well, we obviously like to get all our listeners to know everybody from the start, really, to get your story. So growing up, what first attracted you and an interest in cars, and what was your first experience?
So I'm actually a bit of an outlier. I grew up doing trampoline and circus. I was in gymnastics from the time I was a toddler. I thought I would be a circus performer when I grew up, and ended up, you know, getting a motorcycle license when I was 16, started to drive when I was 14, but my parents aren't very mechanical. No one in my family is in cars. I don't have any extended family either. So it was really, once I discovered that stunts was a career potential opportunity for me and I started really aggressively pursuing it, what I did was basically use the resumes of very successful women as checklists. And a lot of that was driving training. So I did my first stunt driving class when I was 18. And I would kind of say that was almost the moment where I was like, oh, I really like this. But it wasn't motorsport. I like the human-vehicle connection. I like the feeling of operating a vehicle and really having to sense what it's doing and adjust your inputs accordingly. That was something I always loved and seemed to have an aptitude for. So that was really what started me down the path of vehicles in a career sense and in a training sense. And then as I sought to just continue building my skill set, I took kind of every course I could find, stunt driving classes, rally driving, race school, and then eventually I sort of found my way into a drift class, and that for me was the moment where I was like, oh, okay, this is the thing. But up until that point, I never had any reason really to work on my vehicles. I still definitely was surrounded by that, I don't know, they're powered by magical dust and, you know, things break and we don't know how to fix it, and that's outside of my realm of capability. But through drifting and just necessity, we break the cars all the time, and either you go home or you figure out how to fix it. And generally speaking, at a grassroots level, it's just you alone.
Yes.
You know, it was very empowering. I learned a lot about my vehicles. I'm much more confident. I do a lot of the work myself if I have the time. And that has actually become a big part of what I'm passionate about in motorsport. Like, I love competing and I love drifting, but I love the self-reliance and the competence that is very achievable if you just start down that path.
Yeah. So
that's something I really love sharing with women too.
Yeah, that's fabulous. So just listening to you, your passion is undefeated, as it were. You know, it's amazing, your passion. You can just feel it coming across, which is fabulous. But you almost have come, when I say from nothing, you've come from a family where you've had no connection to motorsport at all, and you found your own way.
Absolutely, and it definitely wasn't within the means of my family anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so it was something that I definitely had to build a career in stunts and reinvest the money that I earned doing stunts and, you know, literally setting myself on fire or breaking my limbs.
Wow.
To pay for it. But yes, yeah, so, you know, when you find your thing, I think whether or not you're implanted in it early, when you find your thing, you know. I hope more people who come from a background like me who don't have the opportunity to get into cars when they're 4 or 8 or even 12 or 14,
yeah,
you know, it's still an option for us.
Yeah, it's great. And definitely in England, and I've noticed in Europe, women and girls are being offered more opportunities, but it's still so much more that can be done. They're still way behind the boys.
Yeah, and a lot of that is just the number of people who are going to be exposed as early, who are going to have those early formative years, right? And some of those opportunities, I think, are sort of making up for the initial lack and finding aptitude where it might not have been discovered as early.
Yeah. That's a good point. We're almost a middleman from grassroots to academies like Chelsea, and we're driving as much as we can do because Chelsea, who are the biggest women's club in England, they wouldn't be sending scouts our way to look at girls. I tend to find that the girls that train actually all turn up to learn because they've got to find a team. With a boy, your dad would just buy you a pair of football boots and send you out to the field, and there'd be teams queuing up for you. But girls have got to find a team, and that's what I enjoy, is the fact that they come to learn. And I just wish I could do more, really. But your story is amazing because you come from nothing. We said that you're a professional stunt performer, you're a stunt coordinator, you're a team owner driver and a precision driver, which is amazing. You know, any one of them is great. It's amazing. Can you fill in the gaps a little bit from, you know, as you said, when you started, you've given a little indication of what you've done, but basically your gaps and your story to where you are now?
Yeah, well, nothing is ever a perfectly direct line, but some of the logical progression in stunts, you do physical stunts first before you would generally get any opportunities to do stunt driving, and certain stunt performers who have the aptitude and the opportunity move towards stunt coordination as well. So I've always been a fan of just being the most useful person I can be in an environment, and that led me very quickly to being able to assist stunt coordinators and eventually learn the job for myself.
Yeah.
So I was one of the earliest and youngest female stunt coordinators in Canada, probably the second generation, but at the time that I started, there were maybe 3 women in Canada who were doing it, 3 or 4. But I've been really great. I've had incredible mentors that helped me towards stunt coordination, and stunt coordinating gave me an opportunity to really look at the big picture elements of what we're doing on a film set, which is telling a story. You know, we use action to tell a story, and we have to kind of balance excitement and safety. You know,
yes,
anyone can do a stunt once. If they don't have to walk after, we can definitely make that happen. But the goal is repeatability. The goal is that the person ideally drives themselves home at the end of the day. And as much as possible, the goal is to make stunts that the cast can do a lot of, because seeing their faces on camera is sort of the highest value thing.
Yeah, of course. And before we move on to the amazing things that you do, one question I would like to ask, if you don't mind, is being a female, did you find doors were closed to you, or did you actually find yourself more accepted than what you thought?
So it kind of is twofold. I think that there's been a lot of change in the industry in the last 15 years, I would say, within film specifically.
Yeah.
And I never really thought of myself as a woman entering the space generally. And I think being queer and people knowing that early meant that they were less likely to think, oh, I can sleep with this person, which meant they could only kind of take me at my marriage.
Oh, an ability. Yeah, no, that's fair enough.
And so showing up in those spaces and working hard and really being sure, I just always wanted to be overqualified. So it was very hard for people to question why I was in the room. And if they did, they didn't do it to my face. You know, I was given some opportunities. And after the first few years that I was coordinating, there was already sort of a push where people wanted to have more women, or, you know, the show had a young cast. And they wanted to make those cast members who were 19, 21-year-old women feel comfortable, especially around action. So there's been a shift in the industry, but I would say within stunts, it's only in the last little while that there's really been more of a push towards equality. The women that didn't see that as a thing that should stop them were always succeeding.
Yes,
I think I fall a little bit into that category. But now it's becoming a lot more accepted. And the flip side of that, the guys with their attitudes about women are becoming a lot less accepted.
And that's a good point. One thing just before we move on again, sorry that I've taken from that. And for me, it's the sad thing about it. You said that as soon as they realised that he couldn't sleep with you or weren't able to sleep with you to get the job, it meant they took you on merit. And that is really sad, isn't it? But things are starting to change, aren't they?
And I don't think all men are like that or that it's even necessarily a bad thing. I mean, we work in an industry that is 80-hour weeks. You aren't really exposed to many people outside of your industry in your free time.
Yeah.
And of course, people are going to look for romantic interests wherever they find them.
Yes.
However, you know, I think that there's a tendency to dismiss women who date within their industries in a way that the men aren't dismissed for doing exactly the same thing.
Yeah, that's a very good point. It was just something that you said that I felt sad for you when you said it. We finish off this week's show with our SLB Sports Roundup featuring golf, horse racing, cricket, rugby World Cup, motorsport, NFL and football. We start with golf and the DP World Tour headline this week with the BMW Championship from Wentworth. It was won brilliantly by Ryan Fox, who produced an amazing round after triple bogey in the fourth hole and then going eight birdies in the last 15. He finished on minus 18, overhauling Tyrrell Hatton and Aaron Rye, both who finished on minus 17. This week it's the Open de France from Le Golf National using the Albatross course. The PGA held the 14th championship from the Silverado Resort and Spa in California, and it was won by a guy we've been following for a while, Sahith Tagala, who won on minus 21 and dominated the last two rounds. He beat SH Kim by two, who finished on minus 17, and a further two back to Cameron Davis. This tour's now back on the 5th of October. The Solheim Cup this week, where the two tours, the LPGA with the LET, join forces to produce the women's equivalent of the Ryder Cup. Europe are going for three in a row. They're at home, and it's from the Finca Courtesan in Malaga, Spain. And I think Europe can win it. Team Europe versus Team USA. We've got everything behind Team Europe, and we also believe they could double up in the men's next week, but we will come on to that. Charlie Hull is becoming an absolute star, and European golfers, I believe, will beat the Americans on home soil. On to horse racing. The St. Ledger was the final classic of the year, and as we predicted, it was a good race, and we got the 1-2-3 with Continuous, providing yet another winner for the Ballydore and Maestro Aidan O'Brien, ridden by the brilliant Ryan Moore. A rest trained by John and Daly Dotton couldn't provide Frankie with a final classic in his final year, but he ran a great race. Absolutely brilliant from a rest. And then Desert Hero for the King, who couldn't do better than third, but still produced a great performance under Tom Marcond to get the bronze medal. I just want to say a couple of big shout-out wins to our good friend Holly Doyle. She won the Doncaster Cup in the week on Trushan and then went all the way to Sweden for the Bropark Sprint Championship yesterday, where she won on Washington Heights very, very easily. The Air Gold Cup is this weekend's big race. 30 ran a handicap and an absolute minefield. We've given you a couple in the last few weeks to follow, and we're going to go with five against the field. If you drop around and you like a little bet, but bet responsibly, you can get seven, sometimes eight places. We're looking at Dark Trooper, Anaf, who won well last weekend, Orazio, Summergand, and Significantly. On to cricket, and the one-day series both in England and South Africa have now completed. England won their four-match series 3-1 against New Zealand. South Africa beat Australia 3-2 from being 2-0 down. Preparations for the World Cup. I'm still not sure how many teams, though they're best 11, and it's only a couple of weeks away. On to the Rugby World Cup. Well, it looks like the cream are coming to the top in most instances. France lead Pool A, 2-2. New Zealand a second, played 2-1-1, only getting beaten by France. Ireland and South Africa are both 2-2 in their group, with every other team pointless. Wales are 2-2 in Pool C. Australia, having lost to Wales, are 2-1. And England also lead Pool 2 from Samoa, who are one win from one game and to play their second match coming up. Motorsport. This week sees the return of MotoGP with the GP of India from the Buddha International Circuit. Frankie Bagnaia, the current champion, leads their series for the Ducati Lenovo team. World Superbikes are also back this week with the Tissot Aragon round from Motorland Aragon. And Alvaro Bautista, also on a Ducati, but this time for the Aruba IT team, leads their series. British Superbikes, the first series after the death of the late Paul Bird. Round 9, races 25, 26 and 27 from Alton Park, using the international circuit. The sprint race was won by Glenn Irwin, Paul Bird's team, for Beer Monster Ducati. Lee Jackson from the Cheshire Mouldings Kawasaki team was second, and Leon Haslam, Rokit BMW Motorrad, was third. Glenn Irwin also took the win in race one. Lee Jackson was second again in the same race, and Carl Ride from the OMG Racing Yamaha team was third. Tommy Brybull hit back to form with a win in race two for the Beer Monster Ducati team. His teammate Glenn Irwin was second, nearly getting a clean sweep this weekend, and Lee Jackson produced and continued his great riding to finish third. Well, with only two rounds and six races to go, this is setting up nicely. The two Beer Monster Ducati riders ahead of the pack. Glenn Irwin now leads the table on 360 and a half points. Half a point clear his teammate Tommy Bridewell on 360. They're 60 points back to the third place man Carl Ride for the OMG Racing Yamaha team. They're now back, as we said, round 10, 29th to the 1st of October at Donington Park, races 28, 29 and 30, with just one round to go after that. Speedway Grand Prix was a really strange meeting at Vojens in Denmark, round 10. Conspiracy theory, unlucky, careless, call it what you like. But the current leader and three-time world champion Bartosz Szmarzlik was disqualified minutes before the meeting because he wore the wrong race suit in qualification, which isn't televised. But he wore the wrong race suit and the rules state a €600 fine and disqualification. Well, this threw it up into the air. Bartosz Szmarzlik could have won the championship with a round to go, but he got no points. Freddie Lindgren, who was in second, took major advantage and finished second in the meeting, only beaten by the man on his home track, Leon Madsen, who sent the Danish fans wild, with Jack Holder again riding with that injury, finishing third. So this now leaves the standings going into the final round at Torren. Very close. Bartosz Szmarzlik is still in front on 138 points. Just 6 points, though, in front of Freddie Lindgren now, with Martin Vatkelić back in third on 113. That final round is on September 30th from Torren in Poland. NASCAR, the Bass Pro Shops night race, was held at Bristol Motor Speedway and it was won by Denny Hamlin in his Toyota Camry for Joe Gibbs Racing. Cole Larson was second, Chevy Camaro, Hendrix Motorsport, Christopher Bell, also Toyota Camry and Joe Gibbs Racing, was third. Now, as we said, we're in the shootouts. William Byron now leads the standings for Chevy Camaro for Hendrix Motorsport. He's on 3,036 points, only on Kettleback though, from Martin Truex Jr., Toyota Camry and Joe Gibbs Racing. Third place, Denny Hamlin, just 4 points behind on 3,032. This week, it's the Auto Trader Echo Park Automotive 400 from Texas Motor Speedway and the start of the round of 12. Formula One went to Singapore. Strangely enough, the only track where Mercedes were dominating, they struggled on. And this time it happened to Red Bull. Who'd have thought it? Max Verstappen starting 11th, Sergio Perez starting 13th. Well, it left a race, and what a race it was, with four drivers on the penultimate lap, all within a second. However, George Russell sadly clipped the wall and went into the barriers. He's safe and well, but it left the podium. Carlos Sainz with a brilliantly tackled race, beating Lando Norris and Lewis Hamilton, who started in fifth and drove brilliantly as well. Those three were outstanding. So was George Russell, so was Charles Leclerc, and so was Max Verstappen, who came up to fifth place. Max leads the standings, almost by an unassailable 374 points, 151 in front of his teammate Sergio Perez, and Lewis Hamilton has now moved into third. The first time the 1-2-3 has been broken all season, from Fernando Alonso being third. Lewis is third on 180 points. Red Bull, 597, Mercedes, 289, and Ferrari, 265 are your constructor standings. They're back this weekend with the Japanese Grand Prix from Suzuka. We'll bring you some NFL news up to speed as of next week with full fixtures and full results, although the Kansas City Chiefs did get back on track with another Patrick Mahomes masterclass. We'll finish with football. The Premier League was back with week 5. Wolves 1, Liverpool 3. Fulham 1, Luton 0. Tottenham 2, Sheffield United 1. West Ham 1, Manchester City 3. Manchester United 1, Brighton 3. Aston Villa 3, Crystal Palace 1. Newcastle 1, Brentford 0. Bournemouth 0, Chelsea 0, Everton 0, Arsenal 1, and we'll bring you the Forest and Burnley result next week. The top three in the league, Manchester City, played 5, won 5, 15 points. Second place, Tottenham, and third place, Liverpool, have both got 13 points with a plus 8 goal difference, but Tottenham scored more goals. Look out for our Premier League updates and our Champions League update next week. That's our SLB Sports Roundup. Well, everyone, that's the end of another great show, full of brilliant interviews and a top-class sports roundup. I want to say thank you to young British superstar F1 Academy driver Chloe Chong, Julia Delbert Pusey, who was a star on Below Deck Mediterranean on the little screen, Now got into other business and motherhood. Also, to Dr. Chris George, you know him from the television, telling us how to spot the initial signs of a heart attack, which could lead to cardiac arrest. And of course, Zandara Kennedy, the brilliant stunt woman and film producer. It's a great show. I want to thank you, the listeners, for helping us and supporting us. And to Johan, Rafaela and the whole team at UK Health Radio for giving us this amazing platform. We will see you all next week.